of Dynamic Deputies.
Hello and welcome to the Dynamic Deputies podcast, run by two deputy head. Right, Steve, should we address this straight away?
Absolutely, yes. Hello and welcome, everybody. And it's great to be back talking to you again, Russell. But yeah, the Dynamic Deputies podcast is not run by two deputy heads anymore.
Steve, we'll get on to me in just a minute, but let's update people on your journey since your previous deputy headship post. What are you up to?
Well, yes, I've taken what I'm going to call an extended sabbatical in that sense. Since relocating, only about an hour away, but I did do a relocation with the family and I've moved in with the in-laws as well. We've gone for that big house in the country vibe, but that comes with its own challenges. It did lead to me leaving my deputyship. One of the hardest decisions I made, in the fact that staying would have meant a headship, and leaving meant I was not going to another role, because I did have my eye peeled on any prospects in and around the area, but nothing really struck me initially. So the plan was that, having a little girl at home who I need to spend more time with, I wasn't seeing her, in all honesty, as a deputy. I was 7 till 7 in it to a degree, and I felt I was missing out, and I wanted to spend time with her prior to her going into school. So with no jobs locally around, I did take a route of going into tuition, which I know from looking on groups, there's a large amount of teachers leaving the profession thinking tuition is the answer. I went in it with eyes were really wide open into what could I give to that field. It's unregulated to a degree, so it comes up with its own challenges. And running your own business is tough. And it wasn't something I would say I was eager to do, in the sense of running my own business. But I've enjoyed it, in the sense of being your own mentor, really. Like, you're taking on daily. Like, if you take time off, then, you know, financially you lose out. And it's working to a way that works for you. And I found that really an interesting journey to be on, and to be adaptable and flexible. And actually, I'm looking at the skill set that I'm picking up from being a tutor and running my own business, that can be comparable with leadership. So really enjoyed that. I'll talk more another day about that. I don't want to hover around it. But it's been an amazing, an eye-opening, a roller coaster of a journey, but one nonetheless. And as people might have known from our last podcast, which we did a couple of months ago, maybe longer than that, I can't stay out of school life. And I was really passionate about teacher retention through the crisis that I'm seeing more and more, like with these Facebook groups I was talking to you about, that are essential but are sad at the same time. And myself and my former IT manager at school, we have collaborated together to form Rocket AI, essentially AI tools that will make every teacher's life easier. It will save you time, it will enhance your teaching, yet retain your creativity. And I sound like a salesman now, Russ. So Rocket AI is out there. I'll talk about that again, although it's on the other podcast. Why don't I stop talking about me and let's find out about you? Why are we not the Dynamic Deputies anymore, Russ? What have you been up to?
Well, Steve, as the episode title suggests, I've recently taken that enormous leap into headship, Steve, and we thought that listeners might be interested in both my journey into headship and how it's all been going. So this episode is part one of, well, not sure whether it will be two or three, Steve, we'll see how we get on, where we'll discuss my journey into the role, including all the ups and downs. So yeah, I think you've got some questions to fire at me, Steve, and we just hope this will be a good natter and a good reflection about that journey.
I certainly have got a lot of questions to throw at you, Russ, and I'm wondering if it's going to be a two or three parter. Are we seeing if you're going to survive that long for it to be a three parter, or are we just anticipating a lot of questions from me?
Part three, my journey into being one of your tutors.
Yeah, just enhancing Rocket AI's team. No, let's go from the very beginning then, Russ, because we've worked together and we were both assistant head teachers at one moment in time. Then we've got our own ways down deputyship. When we were doing that, and before we get into the whole journey of headship, was headship actually always an ambition for you?
I always find this a really interesting question. I've been asked it a lot. You know, did you always want to be ahead? Did you have a career path? And I think a lot of people assume that that you must, that you absolutely had that path to headship, you had a timeline on it, you had an age you wanted to be at. I never had any of that. Every single leadership position I've taken has been really kind of, to use that overused phrase, organic. It's been about something that's felt right at the right time. Now, did I somewhere in the back of my mind think to probably try it at some point? Yes, probably. But did I think about it constantly and all the time? Absolutely not. I, if anything, Steve, was petrified of the idea of headship, not because I didn't like the idea of running a school and living out my ethos. That always sounded really exciting. What put me off ever thinking headship was a great idea was how many heads looked really unhappy. And that's not a criticism of heads who are out there. It's a testament to how hard the job is that those brilliant heads all up and down the country do. I have worked for lots of heads. I've seen lots of heads. I've met lots of heads. And so many of them to me looked beaten down, drained, you know, frustrated, felt like they were trying to do the impossible with fewer resources than ever. So there's a bit of yes and no to this answer. Probably in the back of my mind, I quite like the idea of headship, but I was slightly scared of the reality of what that might look like. So it definitely wasn't something I was sort of gunning for. I think it's something that some people who have worked with me thought I probably should or would go into. But no, it wasn't an obsession of mine.
I think that's a fair comment, actually, Russell. Again, when I hark back to our roles as assistant head teacher, sorry, there was always whispers, actually, about were we both going to become head teachers? Would we one day be co-heads, for example? And there were, but what I would always say about you is that there was never a definitive answer from you. You weren't like, yes, I definitely want to be a head one day. There was ambition, of course, in there, and the way you handled yourself, there's always obvious that you had an ethos that you wanted to work with. But yeah, I wouldn't say that you were just straight up, that was it. And we discussed it, especially during the famous COVID years. Headship was incredibly tough then, incredibly tough. And that was enough to put people off, even wanting to be in your current role as a deputy, let alone pursue further. So I can totally see that. So what was your actual prompt? When did you start thinking, I'm going to start looking for a new role? And that new role will not be another deputyship. It will be headship.
When I first started considering another role, it absolutely wasn't about headship. So I, in my previous role, was deputy head. I had perhaps 2 to 3 years, which were pretty amazing, where I really grew into the role, enjoyed it, found my work extremely satisfying. That started to change a bit. There were still aspects of my role I really enjoyed, but particularly in the last year, just not feeling quite right. For a whole variety of reasons, which, you know, I probably won't get into in great depth, but I knew I wasn't feeling like I was thriving anymore. And I did a blog a little while ago that we shared on our social media, and I felt a little bit, and the analogy I used was feeling a bit like a plant kept in the cupboard. And, you know, it did feel like that, like my growth had been a bit stunted, that I didn't feel that I could offer as much as I used to. And I'm a real kind of purpose-driven person. I have to get up in the morning and feel like I'm going off to do something that really motivates me and that I feel I can really give to. I'm a bit, I think you've said it about me before, I'm a bit of an all or nothing person. I'm all in when I'm into something. And that means that when I'm really feeling it, I am all in and I give it my all. And I need to feel that motivation. I need to feel that sense of where we're going and what can be achieved. And I was starting to not feel that way. And that's, for someone like me, a really hard place to be emotionally, because I want to give it my all and I'm not feeling satisfied. And I don't like the feeling that I might be letting people down or not giving them what they need in terms of support. So there was a whole number of things going on for myself and a whole cocktail of emotions around where I was at that time. And I knew it wasn't right. So I began sort of looking outwards a bit and looking at the sort of thing that was out there. And it absolutely wasn't about headship at that time. Now, the first position that I actually looked at, I don't know if you remember this, Steve, was actually a completely new role in an alternative provision.
Yes.
So a thread of my career has been supporting often quite challenging behaviour and so on, and supporting children for whom there's a bit more going on in their lives that makes learning difficult. So I thought, well, maybe AP is where I want to head with things. And a really interesting role came up in a large sort of special school, an AP school, mat in the Southwest. It was called an assistant head role, but it was at a very senior level within the trust with a huge amount of responsibility. And it would see me traveling all over the Southwest to our different provisions and visiting those different provisions, maybe supporting and setting up new provisions. And a lot of those span the secondary world, which was really different. And I thought, goodness, maybe I've got a different angle here. I think I'd be the only primary leader on their leadership team, and so I put in an application and I got an interview, and I thought, this sounds really like what I'm kind of crying out for, a new motivation and a new change. So I went about preparing for that interview, and it was going to be over a couple of days, and really unique experience. And I couldn't speak more highly of the trust and the people there. People that work in Cruise alternative provision, wow, I mean, just incredibly dedicated and passionate people. And they said from the start, you've really got to want to do this for this to work, because it's hard. And I turn up for day one at one of their crews in Plymouth, and it's pretty extreme stuff from the word go that you're witnessing with some of these young people who have sadly struggled in the mainstream system and got themselves permanently excluded. And I expected that, and expected to feel a bit rattled at that moment. And I kind of still felt all right, and I thought, I'm interested in this. And I had a few activities on that day which I completed, and I felt like I was doing quite well. And then I'll fast forward to the end of day one, Steve, when I had a bit of an epiphany moment. They were driving us around to some of their different settings in and around Plymouth. And on the way to one of those settings, we passed a primary school, a mainstream primary school, nothing to do with the trust. And there were kids playing out there at lunchtime, and my heart was just drawn back to that mainstream kind of world. And I thought, my heart's not in this. I'm motivated for a change, but I'm realizing this isn't right. And as I've said earlier, I'm all in. So I thought, I can't waste these people's time. And I finished day one's processes. I did well. I was proud of how I'd conducted myself, represented myself. And I emailed the head from the car park just saying, I've had the most brilliant experience today, but I really don't want to waste your time. And I'm really grateful for the trust you've put in me and the taking a punt on me, but this isn't right for me, so I'm withdrawing. And couldn't have felt more low at that moment. It was like, for me, this was the route into a new perhaps chapter of my life that felt right. And seeing that that wasn't right was kind of really upsetting. Now, the slight weird twist of fate is in the same 24 hours after that, by the way, I got a lovely email from that head who was very kind and supportive, and credit to him for being so lovely. I saw a job come up as a deputy head in a primary school right down the road from me, 5 minutes down the road. And part of my consideration for moving was being a bit closer to home. That was only one part of it, but that was a consideration. So I was like, oh, overnight I've realized that I need to be a mainstream. And then I spot this role in an exciting, interesting looking.
It felt faithful, didn't it? Like
Yeah,
it
it absolutely did, Steve. It felt like fate was doing its thing and nudging me to this opportunity. And I wasn't, again, as I said to you, bothered about headship at this stage. I just wanted a change that felt right. So I arranged to, I think this was the deadline, was the Friday, and I'd had my interview on the Thursday at this other place. So I maybe not the deadline, I can't remember. It was close to the deadline, maybe the Monday. So I went and I called this head, and thankfully she agreed to meet me after school, and we spent half an hour chatting in her library in her school. And I was like, she's great. We connected, we seemed to have resonance and interest in what, the direction of the school. And when she described what she needed, I thought, I can absolutely deliver for this head. I can give her what she needs. I can give her the support, backing, and I like what she's about. So I whack in an application over that weekend. I haven't probably had as much time on it as I'd like, and it we had similarities to the previous one I'd done, although I'd tried to obviously gear it more to mainstream. And eagerly awaited my news about my interview, which I was extremely confident I'd get, because I connected well with a head and written a good, what I thought was a good application. And that week Steve, I get an email to say, we're apologies, you're not going to be shortlisted for the role. Just hit me like a truck.
I can imagine.
Yeah, just hit me like a truck. It was like my whole world came in, because when you're not thriving somewhere in your career and you're not feeling yourself, your confidence is already shaken. And, you know, I've always had faith in my abilities. I've had moments where I've wobbled, but I've known what I'm capable of and I know what I can offer schools. And this was, I was already wobbly and doubting myself in my current setting. And this just hit me like a truck. I was like, they don't even want me as a deputy, you know, they don't even want to talk to me. And you have to really, in those moments, dig deep and think, this isn't a personal thing about you. There's all sorts that could be going on here. There could be other reasons they're interested in other people. Like, it's so complex. And I sought some feedback, and some of it didn't feel overly useful, but there was a bit in there about, you know, there was a lot of theory in your application, and really try and keep it rooted in impact. I thought, okay, well, that's helpful, you know, and I'll try and heed that in the future. And I always hoped that I could heed that and use that at another time further down the line when I'd really need it. Sorry for the long-winded story, Steve, but I think this is all part of the
No,
journey.
I've got a question, but I want you to carry
All
on.
right, all right. And I think of the next patch as the kind of lost in the desert months, you know, because this was all happening. What was it? I think the interview for that AP role was in January, and, you know, then this rejection in the like early February or something like that. So, you know, February, March, April, I'm in this kind of chasm in my life, really. Where do I belong? You know, and then you get near that kind of time of the year that you're acutely aware of from when you were last looking at roles. You get to sort of April, May time, and you think, right, the teacher deadlines are closing now, nothing's coming for next year. And in a way, there was a relief at that point, because it was like, now I need to refocus on where I am. You know, whatever comes in the future, I'll deal with that. But I'm just going to try and commit as best as I can to doing the very best I can in my current circumstances. Wasn't easy, but tried to reconnect more with colleagues who perhaps I'd become a bit distant from, and try and find my purpose again, and do my best where I was, even though I was still feeling quite frustrated with various things. I don't know if that's a good point to pause on, Steve, if you've got a question before I fly into the next chapter here.
Well, I was always wondering when you were talking there, and you're talking about that emotional baggage and the drainage and how it's sucked out of you, your confidence is that. Was there ever a point in this whole journey before applying for that AP, before this deputyship that you didn't result in anything? Was there ever a point where you're considering the teaching profession and exiting it, or were you always still instilled and be confident in you were in the right profession? The only reason why I'm asking is what we're seeing at the moment, this trajectory of people exiting.
I think that's a good question. I for me, Steve, it wasn't really a choice to leave the profession at that stage. I needed financial security. I needed to, you know, I was on a good wage as a deputy, and I needed that stability in my next role. I couldn't at that stage do anything too wild and brave. And a huge admiration for what you did at the time in your life. You did when it was a complete unknown, and you just flew yourself into this new business that you've done so well on, and we
Can
had a
be
good.
stupid as well, though, can it?
It could be, but you made it happen. But I didn't have that capacity emotionally or financially at that point to take that kind of leap. So no, I knew it needed to be an education, and I kind of resolved myself to the fact that, look, you know, I do try and be a glass half full person, even though I have my low moments. And I sort of thought, well, look, you've got a good wage. You have still got some brilliant people around you where you are. There are some bits you find really hard. But if you're stuck here for a bit longer, you know, you'll be okay. You'll make the most of it, and you just need to be ready if an opportunity does come up. So I kind of resolved to stick where I was. And I had a really amazing conversation with my colleague Cassie, who's a friend of mine and was an assistant head at the school, or still is. And she just said to me, look, Russell, I don't want you to go. I love working with you, but can I just ask something of you, please? If you are going to go, please don't look at deputy headships. Please go run a school. Please be a head. And can't tell you how big a deal it is to have someone you care about and admire. And she wasn't the only one that said lovely things like that to me. But it was just the frankness with which she said that to me. It was almost like a telling off. It means the world when your confidence is shattered and you don't think you're worth anything anymore, you know. And I really was that low at key points. To have someone sort of say that to you and give you a good talking to you just really made me think, right, Russell, you know, maybe she's right. And I didn't then suddenly start looking at headships, but that kind of lingered in the back of my mind, I think, and made me question some of the negative self-doubt that I'd had in the months sort of between January and May time. So yeah, big thank you to Cassie for that.
100%, yeah. But isn't it amazing how people can have a huge impact on direction?
Amazing.
And I'm thinking back, even in my own situation where I think of an Ofsted that I went through that rocked the school, and then forming with a trust, and confidence can be so altered. And then suddenly, I remember specifically when I felt I got my mojo back,
yeah,
and confidence back from one person who literally, I was deputy and in year six as well, came in, was doing an internal review basically of the school, and this person came in, saw me teach, and I spent the afternoon with senior members of the trust going around and reviewing the school, and it was, what they said at the end of that day was like so powerful for me to think, I have still got, like, yeah, there's ups and downs, but it really made a positive impact. And then that's why when I started to turn down the headship, I remember having to have my notice in when I knew the move was going through, and thinking, God, I've just cut off. And I always had the aspiration of headship,
yeah,
still do.
Yeah.
It was knowing that one of the person who was in effect going to be my boss within the lines of communication, that person I thought so highly of, how he had run the school, that it was like his baby that he was passing down to me.
Yeah.
Had such good communication, such good ideas coming through, knew the support structure was there. It was like handed, and there's like, you can run with this. And the belief in you as a person, like what Cassie's done for you, it's phenomenal. And it's not just being kind for kind's sake, it's that belief and that installation into you, okay,
yeah.
It just fills your body with that passion again, doesn't it?
Almost,
I'm going to do
it
this.
It does, and it almost shakes you up. It almost frightens you,
yeah,
that someone can have such certainty about you that you don't have about yourself. So, yeah,
yeah,
we know, you know, be an encourager, people listening, be an encourager, because
100%.
You could, as you say, Steve, completely change the direction of someone's thinking and path for themselves. So that meant the world. So yeah, so after that, I kind of cracked on with my job, and then I'd keep a lookout just in case something came up. And I think right near the end of the summer term, you know, when I was fully sort of planning ahead for September to be where I was, up pops this head of school position, and it's about 15, 20 minutes from my house. And I'm like, like, location wise, that's great. At the moment, I'm traveling 35, 40 minutes a day, so it's a bit closer. Head of school position. Okay. All right. You know, pays okay. And, you know, it fits the kind of practical elements of my life that it needs to fit. But it just sort of sounds quite interesting. So I think this was right near the end of the summer, and it was for a January start, which was already a kind of, oh, I've never done that in my whole career. I've never left halfway through a school year, but I, you know, maybe the timing of that with other things I've got going on in my life could kind of work. So I kind of saw the advert and showed a bit of an interest, and then, you know, just went on and found a contact, I think, and just emailed someone and said, look, I know the closing date's for September, because I think it was over the summer holidays. Is there a chance? I know it's the summer, but is there anyone I can chat to? Because I obviously want it, you know, I didn't want to stew over this the whole summer. I kind of wanted to resolve myself to either going for it or not. And I'm terrible.
Yeah.
Once I notice something like that, or I'm thinking about something, I can't shut off from it. I have to know either way. So I thankfully get an email back from who I now know to be the link director or one of the link directors for the trust, who oversees, you know, a group of those schools. And she had a phone call with me, and I just really liked her. I thought, you know, she spoke really genuinely about the school. I thought, if this is the senior leadership within the trust, that's already a really nice thing. Really liked her honesty about where the school was at and what wasn't good enough or needed work, and also her frankness about what they felt they needed. And you never know with a trust, do you, about whether they're kind of tapping up someone internally and they're just putting it out there because they have to. I really felt that they genuinely were open to anyone and perhaps even quite keen for a fresh pair of eyes from outside the trust. And that all came through in the phone call. So yeah, I can picture myself in my kitchen with my shorts and t-shirt on a nice hot sunny day, just chatting for about 30 minutes to this person in the middle of the summer. And yeah, so at that point I thought, yeah, I'm going to apply, but obviously you would like to arrange a visit too.
Yes, well, that's what I was going to say. So once you've found this advert, it's for the position you're currently in now, there were going to be similarities between the application process and what steps you take before applying, actually, with a teacher job or another SL teacher. What were the steps you actually took before applying to know that this was going to be right for you?
Yeah, so from the phone call, I already had a really strong sense it could be right. You obviously do all the looking at the website and finding out as much as you can and talking to anyone you happen to know. But then I think the deadline for submitting your application was only about a week into the September. You know, it was really quick. So I had to kind of give my current head the heads up that I was quite likely to apply for something.
So you did
like
tell
to...
your head teacher. You were very transparent.
Yeah.
Really good.
I think it's always best to be in education. I really do. And that's the advice you and I have always given people for teaching posts as well. Say if you're going to look at something, and I know there's always a fear of repercussions or whatever, but I was beyond caring about that sort of thing. I just needed to do what was right for me. So I sent an email to my current head and I arranged a visit at the school I was interested in. And the current or the present head at the time took me round, and she was lovely and very passionate about the team that was there. And when she spoke about the team, she actually got quite emotional, and I thought it's really interesting to see you get so moved talking about the people you work with. And for me, that was a good indicator because I want to work with nice people. I saw some things straight away. I thought, it's going to be a challenge.
Did you go when the school was open or after?
Yeah. Definitely when the school was open.
So you thought it's essential for this job that you would go?
Absolutely. I wanted to see what I was potentially biting off. I knew from the phone call I'd had with the link director that there were some things that needed work, and the school had a lot of new challenges in the previous couple of years around behaviour and send, and was still adapting to that and still is. So I kind of knew there were some things that would be tricky, but I wanted to see it for myself and I wanted to absorb school a bit. So yeah, I did that, and there were things that drew me to the place around people and so on, but there were things that also made me a bit apprehensive, some of the challenges I knew there would be. And because where I'd been in my school in Exeter, I'd been there for 5 years, so many of the systems and things we had done were really well established. They'd been, you know, really honed and developed over that 5 years, and they weren't, nothing was perfect, but some of that stuff just happened. It's the way we did it there, you know. And I could say that to people on a tour, oh, we do it like this here. And to go somewhere else and thinking, gosh, Rush, you're starting all over again, you know, you've got to make this your place. And it was daunting. It was daunting, but at that stage I definitely felt a strong hunch that it was the right opportunity. And there's something to be said for instinct in these situations, timing and so on. And you know, when it came to them writing an application, I was determined to take my difficult experiences in the deputy headship that I wasn't shortlisted for and really tried to make it very evidence-based and back up absolutely everything I said I was good at or could do with a concrete example. And that's not always going to be data. Sometimes that's an anecdote, sometimes that's a quote from an Austin inspector. You know, there's various things that went in to prove that I was what I was saying I was, and it was enough to get the interview, thankfully.
And I'm going to come back to something you said about when you were walking around, there were some things that opened your eyes. Did you feel like you knew what you'd be getting yourself into when you applied for the role?
I think I thought I did at the time, and I think to a large extent I did. Wow. There's probably been some bits since starting the role. I'll spoiler now, Steve. We're telling them I got it. There are some things on reflection that I think, gosh, that's perhaps even more challenging than I realized. But I think I did have a strong sense of what was going to be tricky or tough. So I did. Yeah, I do think I had a good sense of what I was biting off.
So you could see some of the fires that were lit.
Yeah, there were just stuff. They're just stuff around systems, you know, systems in all areas, particularly with regards to behavior. And that was going to be something that I would need to do some real groundwork in when I started.
Fair enough. So you then proceeded with your application, and I love how you mentioned that you took what feedback you got from the previous two, adapt your application. You get shortlisted. That must be exciting.
Yeah.
Talk me through it, because I know from experience, headship, not really 2-day timetable. Talk me through your interview days themselves. And what I'm really thinking of for our listeners is, what type of things did you have to do? How did they go? And following from that, how did they tell you you've been successful within the tasks themselves? Like, how did it all proceed after that?
Yeah, I mean, on this theme of kind of confidence building, even just getting shortlisted lifted me immeasurably, because I was
that with a call, or was that a letter or an email, Russ?
I think it must have
too related. You can't remember.
I can't remember. I think it must have been an email at that stage to about shortlisting. Yeah, huge relief just that someone even thought I was, because I hadn't lost faith in is that if I got my foot in the door somewhere and I could do my thing,
yes,
I would be all right. Like, I could do my best, and if I wasn't the right fit for them, fine. I knew I could perform, I knew I could connect with people, I knew I could reflect my views well. So just knowing I had my foot in the door was like, thank goodness, you know, I can get in there and prove myself. So that was a huge relief. I think it was a pretty kind interview process over a couple of days. Day one, I should have really written this down before starting the episode, because it's all a bit of a blur, but I definitely had to do a whole school assembly, and that had to be around one of the school values. So that was interesting, because for me, that's a great opportunity just to connect with that whole school community. And you know, you and I as leaders, we're all about that, and we always have been. It's about the connection with the children. I can picture you at the front in assemblies, and you can picture me. We were human, we were connection, we were relational, and that's where we set out our stall for who we were and what we wanted. And that's really what I wanted to do. So we talked, I mean, one of their key words is around flourishing, and I really just wanted to explore what it meant to be a flourishing learner in a school. And you know, I had a kid standing a plant pot, and we pretended to have him grow, and that was all quite enjoyable. I'm not a heavy props person in my assemblies typically, but I was that day, and that felt good. What else did I have to do? I can't remember the order of all these, but I had to observe a lesson, and not feedback to that teacher, but feedback to a trust leader who had sat in there with me. I had done a school council meeting.
Always the best part of any interview.
Yeah, absolutely fine. I was quite happy with that bit. And there's always that lovely moment when one of the kids at the end goes, I really hope you get the job. And that's nice. And you're kind of like, phew, can you say that a bit louder for the link director who sat in the corner listening? What else did I have to do?
Any data-driven tasks?
You know what? There was nothing data-driven at
all. Or budget?
As far as I can remember. And I don't think there was specifically budget, and I don't know if that's because in a large trust you have a bit more infrastructure around. You have a central team who does a lot. It's not that you don't need to know stuff about budget, because you do, and in my school we manage our own budgets, but to a certain extent, or certain budget lines. But no, they didn't make that a focus of the task. I had to do a little talk to the staff about what I would, at the end of the day, about what I would want to achieve in my first 100 days. Now, interestingly, that was the one that almost caught me out, because it had said something like to a panel or something like that, or to a select couple of members of staff and a parent representative or something. So I was picturing myself in a meeting room with maybe four people, but it ended up just being in one of the classrooms with any member of staff who wanted to turn up. So that was really different. So that's a very different dynamic, because you're not now thinking so much about pitching it at trust leader and maybe a couple of parents, maybe one teacher. You're thinking, actually, I've got the teacher stuff and a few TAs that have turned up. So it's a very different vibe. It's essentially what I wanted to say didn't change, but maybe the way I phrase certain things had to off the cuff. So, yeah.
I'm sorry, I've just got a question I know I should ask. Everyone's going to want to know, I reckon. Did you have any other candidates were here then? If this was one of the tasks.
This was the slightly strange bit. So I was due to be up against one other candidate on the day. And when I arrived, it was a bit, there were a few sort of flustered people in the reception area, people who were clearly running the day, looking a bit taken aback. And I was sort of sat down in the head's office for a bit. And then someone came in and sort of said, right, it's been a bit of a hiccup. The other candidate that was meant to turn up today has had a, I think, childcare issues or something like that and won't be coming today. So I was kind of like,
Don't
oh, so
postpone it,
is,
don't postpone
yeah,
it.
are they going to do that on another day or whatever? And they said, we're not sure at the moment what's happening there, but we'll crack on with your day. That made the day unusual in some ways and really positive in others. So the unusual bit is, I mean, you've been there, Steve. Sometimes when you go through an interview process and you're up against a couple of people, I know this sounds horrid, but there's almost a comparative exercise going on in your own head, isn't there?
Yes.
When you sit down in between sessions and you're talking, you think, or, you know, I feel like I'm a bit more confident with this or whatever. It's not that you want someone else to do
Not at all, no.
badly or you wish them badly. You get a sense of maybe how you're doing or whether you're connecting differently with people. So I had no comparison for the day. And that in some way was a bit scary because I didn't really, and I imagined for staff that must have been weird because it's like, we've got nothing to hold this guy up
Yeah.
against today.
And
So I
within break,
didn't.
sorry, Russ, but within breaks as well. It's nice to have some light relief that you can talk to other people that aren't
True,
part of the
true,
school committee,
true.
yeah.
On the positive, what it meant was I felt like it was my school just to enjoy for the day, not mine as in I was head, as in mine to just go and peruse, and felt like it was just for me really for the day. So that was a nice side of it and maybe took some pressure off in another way. But obviously there was this massive unknown around, is, you know, how are they going to handle this? That was a bit strange. So I get through day one and that feels pretty positive. I feel like I've given a fair and honest account of myself, and I, on the whole, feel like I perform well in my tasks. And then day two was just a formal interview,
Right.
which was kind of right in the middle of the day at one of their other schools in the trust, so about an hour away. And
And you had no feedback at the end of day one then about that phone call at the evening.
no idea,
Wow.
no idea how that was going. So that was really, again, put me on edge.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, what are they thinking about me? What's happening with the other one? So I go for my interview on day two, which has the CEO who I haven't met yet, one of the link directors that's followed me around the previous day, my actual future link director who wasn't there on day one. I think that was it. Was it just the three of them? There might have been a fourth. Can't remember. It's all a bit of a blur. And sat down and had my formal interview, which must have lasted 30, 45 minutes, something like that.
Was there any
Yeah,
presentation
with
within that, or just a series of
there
questions?
wasn't, no, just some good, tough questions with a few supplementary questions, particularly from the CEO, who's really hard to read at times and prompted a few on a few other things, but that gave absolutely nothing away. You know, I've walked out of interviews before thinking I've nailed that. It's gone really well. I've impressed them. I had no idea
Did you have a sweaty back at that
how.
point, though? Where you think,
I think I had a sweaty everything, Stephen. But I got out there and I went and sat at the beach for that
Oh.
afternoon, and because it was on the coast, and I was just a nervous wreck. Yeah, for the whole afternoon, just yeah. And I'd met my partner that afternoon for a cup of coffee at the beach, and I must have just been the worst company. And later that afternoon, we took a selfie at the beach, and she said to me, "This is either going to be a picture one day that really makes a smile, or you're going to delete because it's going to remind you of a rubbish day." And you know, I look at that picture now, and I just look, you know, the fake smile that people do when they're really apprehensive.
Gritted teeth.
All our other smiley selfies look really legit and genuine, and that one just didn't. So I sit there apprehensively waiting for a phone call, and they'd said to me, "Oh, we've got a few other interviews today, so we might not get back to you till later." So I was a bit confused about that because I wasn't clear whether that was for another role or the same role, and was this other person. So that was all playing on my mind too. So I get to, I don't know, 4-ish in the afternoon. I say to my partner, "Right, I got to get back." She had to get back, so or 3 or 4 in the afternoon. So I travel all the way back to my house and lay on my bed and just start really feeling sorry for myself. Like as the afternoon goes on, I'm thinking they've had 3, 4 hours now. Like they should know by now. And it really, time really starts ticking on. And then it gets to Gone 5. And I'm thinking, what, like, how can they not know by now? And if they do,
you're
why
either in
can't
or
they?
you're not, yeah.
Yeah, why can't they put me out of my misery? And then I can't remember the exact time. I want to say 4:15. And my phone goes off. And just, yeah, you just get that sinking feeling in your tummy.
I say, did you want to answer it, or were you thinking,
oh, no,
oh,
I felt. I was desperate for, I just wanted to be put out of my misery, but I also felt so sick because I thought this could just bring me right down again. And yeah, again, even just the start of the phone call doesn't make it overly clear. And I'm like, and then, yeah, she just said, we'd like to make you the, you know, offer for the job. So I was just at that moment, like overwhelmed by emotion, you know, had to really hold it together so I didn't turn into a blubbering mess on the phone because just felt like the entire, what were we by then, 9 months since that first role I looked at had all just sort of come to this moment, and suddenly all the pain and heartache and frustration and ups and downs seemed worth it. And here I was at the precipice of something new, which I'd been craving. Big moment.
Huge moment, absolutely, and on a Friday as well. So I'm
Yeah.
thinking in my head, you probably had a few drinks that night and you tried to enjoy the
Sure,
weekend
I
a little
did.
bit. But after you were successful, what happens next? Like, what did you do to prepare for the position? You obviously went in on the Monday and you had to inform your current head of what's
Well,
happening.
I messaged on the Friday night, so
Right.
she knew that news.
Okay.
I have to admit, before I get into the things I practically did to prepare for the role, and then that's where we'll kind of stop before the next episode. But I have to say, I had about 3 weeks convinced the rug was going to be pulled from underneath me. You know, until you've
Right.
literally signed a contract, you're normally in teaching, you're like, oh, it's all good, or you're a bit apprehensive. But it felt like such a big moment in my life. I was like, what if they change their mind? What if there's a problem? What if there's a,
Well, if
you
that
know,
other candidate comes back.
exactly, like every insecurity that could have come to mind
Yeah.
did. And I really did not think it was like, I got the role in the September, and it was like mid-November that I was, it was like late October when I had my first sort of transition day there. That I was like, oh, maybe this is real now. And I kind of accepted that I had it and I deserved it. So then my current head at the time agreed to release me for, I think it was something like 4 Wednesdays, I think it was, over the next month or two, so that I could go into the school and just do whatever I needed to in terms of handover. The head I was taking over from was actually leaving at October half term for a new role, and there was an interim head, someone that the trust knew, who had used to work for the trust, doing like a 6-week stint up until
Gosh.
Christmas. So that was a bit tricky for the
Yeah.
school and for the staff. It was hugely tricky, you know, multiple
And
transitions.
how many of those transition days did you do the heads and then the
Most with the interim head, so
right.
one with the current head. It was all
Wow.
quite rushed,
Yeah.
as you can imagine. One with the current head, and she met with us both actually to pass over as much as she could. And then I think a further 3 sessions with the interim head, who was equally just trying to absorb as much as she could in a short time.
Yeah.
And she was great in terms of our communication and me getting my head around new things. And she, you know, we had a couple of Zoom calls here and there, and a couple of phone calls where she would keep me in the loop over things. But I can't say enough how hard it was to have your head in two worlds. At that point, I couldn't really give anything to the new school. I was so busy still as a deputy head in my current school, so
And
you know,
that's the issue,
all
isn't it?
consuming.
Your current role does not ease up. No one. Day-to-day
No,
running of a school doesn't stop because you're now thinking about your
absolutely.
next job.
Hugely demanding role still, hugely important priority stuff I was trying to drive forward with attendance in particular in that term. And yeah, that was taking a lot from me. So no, I didn't really have any headspace for it. One thing I vowed to do was to be a listening head. So in one of those days, the interim head had facilitated for me to have one-to-one meetings with every single member of staff that wanted to have one, and almost everybody signed up. So I had this day where I spoke to goodness knows how many people back, you know, back to back all day from sort of 9 till 3:30. And that was brilliant. It was really good. And I told them the week before, or 2 weeks before, when I was last in, I'm going to ask you 2 questions. So you've got time to think about it. I want you to tell me what's the best thing about working here, and what do you think needs to improve? And
as simple as that, two question meeting.
That's all I wanted to know, because I thought that's all I've got the headspace for at this stage. And I, you know, what that'll give me is a sense of stuff I need to preserve and build on, and stuff that if everyone's saying needs to change. And it was so obvious within about three conversations into the day that everyone was going to say the same two things, and they did. And I'm not going to go into great detail about that, but there was, well, actually, I think, you know, it's perfectly reasonable to share the positive, which was like everyone talked about the team ethos and the people and how people will look out for one another. And that for me seemed like an incredibly big strength for every member of staff to mention, because I've worked in places that are fractured, or you know, where there have been cliques or whatever. So to have everyone say, no, genuinely, this team's amazing, everyone will look out for one another. And that's proved true. And since I've been at the school, I thought, well, that's something to anchor ourselves in as a school. And I've kind of alluded to behaviour, but that was a common strand around, you know, people wanting better structures around that, and how we support good behaviour in the school. So that was a really helpful listening exercise. But I also sent out a survey to parents in the November, ahead of me starting in the January, asking the same two questions. And again, that was really fascinating. And I did a little staff meeting with staff before I began sharing their parent insights.
Amazing. I was just thinking, obviously the positive couldn't parry up there if you're talking about the team, but were parent and staff similar in terms of views?
Yes, I think what you get with parents is a slightly more diverse mix of things, because their perspectives are
about
really
their child,
unique. The strengths were similar in that they talked about the brilliant staff team and how caring they were and their ethos, and that did come through. And, you know, yeah, some of the stuff around behaviour did come up as the areas to develop, but there were a few other things, the stuff that really mattered to parents. So stuff around sports provision in lower school or whatever it might be, you know.
Yeah.
So that was helpful, though, because that gave me one chance to do some positive PR with the parents around listening and like genuinely wanting to listen and wanting to find out their views, and just gave me a flavour of the things that niggle people. And that doesn't mean you go in the January ready to solve all that, but it just gives you a tone that you're aware of where the land lies at the moment.
When the stakeholders within your community, you wanted to be a listening head teacher, and automatically people know you are doing that. Prior to your arrival, you are giving an ear to people. So
That's it really. And Steve, I'll just finish up by saying, you know, I didn't have anything to give to the new role up until Christmas, and I didn't have anything to give to the new role over Christmas. I remember finishing my role on whatever day it was, on the Friday, just the week before Christmas, and thinking, I am just on my knees, like everyone is just before Christmas anyway, and thinking, I've got absolutely no headspace to think about being a head teacher for the next week and a half.
And a very short turnaround, very, particularly when you've got Christmas in there and you've got a family.
Yeah. Then, I always imagine that if I did take on a headship, I'd have a 6 week summer holiday to be in.
What did you,
yeah,
what did you
absolutely
actually have? About
2 weeks. Yeah.
About 8 days by the time you take Christmas, New Year celebrations out there.
Oh, yeah. And that, absolutely. Mm. And I remember I'd gone to Essex to see my family between Boxing Day and the New Year.
And you live across
days.
The other side of the country, of course you do.
Yeah. And I live on the other side of the country. And I remember maybe on the 29th or something, my mum going, so how are you feeling about the job? I went, I'm not ready to talk about it, mum. And she was like, oh, it's only a few days. I went, not ready. Can't. Just actual panic starting to come over me. Like, what the heck have you done, Russell?
Well, we didn't speak that much at all about that at the time.
No,
so
no.
Your head's
I, I had... I was literally in denial. It was like, I am excited about this, but I am petrified, because what I can't say enough, and it's really coming back to me talking about it, was that feeling that I'm meant to go in next week and run a place where I know less about the place than everybody in the building. The caretaker knows more about this school than I do. So how am I, why, what right have I got to walk in and try and run the place and tell people what to do? No idea. I definitely felt terrified in the January about going in for day one, which was an inset day, thankfully run by the trust, so I didn't need to kind of plan that. Although that felt a bit funny, because I would have always again visualized on my first day in an inset day, like lay down my kind of ethos and who I am and why, and I had none of that time. It was like straight in, we have other schools from the trust coming over to do something online, and yeah, a bit mental really. But
they know
yeah,
more about it there though, right?
Yeah. I'll stop there. Stop there. Part one done.
That is amazing, amazing. It's, I don't know what your journey that you've actually gone on there. Some of it just blows my mind as to how you cope with that, especially to cope with a turnaround like you did there. Amazing.
It's a year, Steve. It's been nice. It's
Yeah.
been really nice sharing, reflecting on that with you tonight. And, Steve and I genuinely have really struggled with time to talk to each other in the last 6 months. We've both been so busy, and some of this stuff, Steve, genuinely would have been hearing for the first time tonight. So I hope listeners found it interesting. And in our next episode, I'll walk you through my first month or so in post. But Steve, thanks as always for a wonderful chat. It's been lovely to catch up, mate.
A huge thank you to everyone listening as well, because this means a lot to us as well, doesn't it, Russ? And please do let your colleagues know about the podcast, and we promise we will be back very, very soon.
Now, before you shoot off, a quick shout out for one of our favourite websites, TestSpace. With an enormous bank of questions you can use for reading comprehension, SPAG, and to enhance the maths curriculum, it's an old and goldie we couldn't be without, especially at this time of the year when we're all prepping for Year 6 SATs. Thanks for listening, everybody.
The Dynamic Deputies.